Head over now to the United Kingdom, a dramatic United Kingdom at the moment. Good afternoon, Richard Fitzwilliams, how are you?
Well, as you say, the United Kingdom at the moment in an extraordinary state.
And what do you make of it, Richard, at the moment?
Well, I don't think that anybody has any idea what is actually going to happen. And when you've had the biggest government defeat in history by 320 on Theresa May's Brexit agreement, and then subsequently the government surviving a no-confidence motion by 24, you simply see the attempt, the beginnings of an attempt, to form some sort of cross-party agreement. But what and in what way and with what result, I wouldn't even begin to speculate.
It's interesting times, Richard, it certainly is, and very dramatic times. Going on to movies, and I think, in light of all that's going on in the news, sometimes a movie is a welcome relief and a bit of escapism. And we watched the other night something you looked at last week, reviewed, This Is Us. Life Itself by the makers of This Is Us. And so I stopped watching the film, Richard. I'm aware of what you've said and aware of what other critics have said about it. And within about the first 15 minutes, I'm ready to turn it off.
And, really had that effect on you?
I said to my wife, let's turn it off. And she said, let's just be patient, give it a bit long. By the end of the film, I really, really enjoyed it. And I loved the Spanish story like you did as well.
How fascinating.
Yeah.
That really is interesting because so much was thrown at it. The contrived plot was said, the cancer sufferer, the way that it was artificially linked, the lecture at the end and so on. But very interesting that.
Yeah, I just couldn't buy into the characters and then suddenly it started to drop into place for me. And I did like Antonio Banderas and the Spanish story from Seville. And that side of it, so maybe that's what really kind of kept me on. But I think it's worth a watch. We really enjoyed it, so that was good.
Well, I hope listeners might then perhaps consider giving it a chance if they can fit it in amongst a whole collection of other movies, which are also pretty good.
Yeah, it featured on, because we were saying last week we weren't sure how it was going to be released, and Sky Premier the next morning had it on their channel. And so it is on Sky and probably in other places as well if you want to find it. Richard, let's start today with Mary, Queen of Scots, then.
And that's a dramatic movie. My goodness me, it is audacious. And it's, one thing I have to say, and that is I do totally welcome director Josie Rourke's interpretation of history, because to make it dramatic, you've got to have an idea, you've got to put that idea across, now whether it works or not, and it's mixed in this, in my view, you've nonetheless got a very, very provocative film here.
Yeah.
Because she sees both Elizabeth and Mary as victims of brutal patriarchal societies in the 16th century, which could indeed be argued. So when Elizabeth finally has Mary executed, and the film begins with Mary about to be executed, dressed in crimson, more very dramatic, she has, so to speak, metamorphosed mentally into a man, behaving as though a member of the patriarchy would. It's an inventive feminist message. It is at times unsubtle. It's certainly unusual. And it's mostly, though not exclusively, concentrates on Mary's story, because it tells her tragic story in flashback. She's brought up in France and widowed and returns to Scotland, a Catholic, in a music-loving, capricious, romantic, and then you've got this dour, misogynistic, she's Catholic, the Protestant environment of Scotland is unrelentingly hostile, and of course the dramatic and bloody events that we know that lead her to seek refuge from her cousin Elizabeth, and of course she's a threat to Elizabeth. Elizabeth is stirring up rebellion against her in Scotland on the advice of William Cecil, advisor played by Guy Pearce. She sees Elizabeth in this, the concept is the concept of sisterhood. And the two, they never, of course, actually met, but nonetheless, they meet here. And we've got Saoirse Ronan's performance as Mary, which I thought dominated the film, and also was very much the conscience of the film. Mm. She's a symbol of the oppression of women, headstrong, often unwise, but possessing an enchanting life force, opposite the Margot Robbie. You remember her in I, Tonya?
Yes, very good.
Very good there. Here, it's a really challenging role. She plays a manipulative, often callous queen, and yet, when they actually meet, there are parts of that simply don't work. I mean, Elizabeth wouldn't remove her wig in deference to Mary's beauty. I mean, that's ridiculous. And it's an impressive performance, but climactically, as we all know, Elizabeth had this alabaster mask, which became legendary. Now, she wouldn't climactically remove, as it were, become some form of hideous gargoyle, almost as though the mask was a form of penance for the regicide she committed. That's a tough role for Margot Robbie, I do have to say. And, of course, Mary's marriages, Lord Darnley, played by Jack Loudon, Lord Bothwell, played by Martin Compson, the savage murder of her confidant, David Rizzio, played by Ismael Cruz Cordova, all very dramatically chronicled, visually impressive, but an interesting concept that both queens were victims of the male-dominated societies. Yeah. Probably you could fault it in the sense that Elizabeth had a dedication and charisma which was legendary, and Mary did have some culpability for what she suffered. But a movie to give you plenty to chew on.
Yeah, it seemed like from what I saw the clips, they seemed pretty convincing in their roles. And I was hoping you were going to say it was worthwhile watch. I'm thinking maybe historical, if you want to sit there with your encyclopedia, you're probably going to find lots of holes in it there. Were they really cousins in real life? Excuse my ignorance here. Were they, in the film they say they were cousins. Is that the case?
Oh, they were. Well, in fact, Mary was a serious threat to Elizabeth. That was why her advisors were so concerned. And there is absolutely no doubt, of course, Mary's son succeeding Elizabeth was the ultimate irony, considering Elizabeth had Mary executed. It was partly a set-up job by one of her advisors. The facts are that Mary's story is a tragic one, and she's always seen as a romantic heroine. Elizabeth, of course, who never married, and Mary's son inheriting the English and Scottish thrones. It's one of the most fascinating parts of our obsession with the Tudors, that the two remarkable monarchs, Henry VIII and Elizabeth I, there's no doubt that the portrayal of Elizabeth is far from kind in this movie, but it is a movie that's thought-provoking.
Yeah, so is it worth a watch, Richard? What's the rating you're going to give it out of 5?
The rating is 3.5. It's certainly worth a watch.
Lovely stuff. Okay, moving on now to something completely different, as we say, Stan and Ollie.
Yes, certainly. Directed by John S. Baird, and of course, listeners will remember the famous comedy duo, Laurel and Hardy. The film mainly deals with a tough tour they go on the United Kingdom and Ireland in 1953, when they also intend to get a comedy made about Robin Hood. We begin in Hollywood in the 1930s, where Stan refuses to renew his contract with Hal Roach, played by a gloriously serpentine Danny Houston, because he feels it's so mean. Ollie's tied to Roach in a different contract, so he remains as a solo act, and that causes problems between the two of them. Switch to the 1950s, and the great success they enjoyed in the past no longer applies. They are on tour. Lord Del Font arranges this, and this initially, little publicity, they play to empty houses, plan for the film. Stan actually discovers the film's not going to be made, but doesn't tell Ollie. And subsequently, they're joined by their spouses. Quite remarkable performances here by the wife of Stan is played by Nina Ariander, monstrously and almost domineeringly obsessed with him and devoted to him, and Shirley Henderson, so protective as a wife of Ollie. The audiences come alive, they play at the Lyceum, and then what happens, they do publicity for the appearances, and Ollie has a heart attack. I mean, I do have to say with this movie, I must make an on-air confession. I never saw what was remotely amusing about Laurel and Hardy.
I'm with you on that as well.
I don't find them funny.
No.
I mean, I have to be absolutely honest. I didn't laugh at a single thing, either the imitations that I saw when I seen them in the films originally, which has been as seldom as I can possibly make it. I mean, yeah. Our listeners just simply have to know that that side of it did not draw me to the movie.
There's a lot of people. There's a lot of people that would agree with you there, and people I've spoken to about this, something I can relate to fully. And yet, then there'll be those who think they're just brilliant. And I've got nothing against them. I can, you know, they don't offend me, or I don't think, you know, they're not very good at what they do. But it just isn't me. It's not my cup of tea.
Well, it's certainly not me, and I have to say that when it comes to timing, I mean, Chapin was a genius, but what was funny about the act of a duo who became lovable and were known around the world, but I do have to say here, the strong point of this film are these two excellent performances by BAFTA nominee, best actor, Steve Coogan, and Stan Laurel, and John C. Reilly puts such a load of panache and heart into playing Oliver Hardy. There's no question that it's a very well-acted film. The wives are extremely good. And Rufus Hound as Lord Delphont is wonderfully villainous, rather good there. I have to say, I enjoyed the film. I did enjoy it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But let's not pretend that it doesn't use every single possible cliche about show business, about what happens when you have a heart attack, and listeners will not need a spoiler because you can bounce back even from the worst.
As well, I think, you know, if you were a fan of Laurel and Hardy, that would probably add to the film, I should imagine, as well.
Oh, I think there's no doubt that fans of Laurel and Hardy will be drawn to it.
Yeah.
And it really is. But of course, there's the nostalgia kick. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt at all. The fact it is entertaining. It's the timing of this act. Even if you don't find it funny, it can be rather curious to realize as to why a great millions of people around the world thought it was absolutely hilarious. You've got two first-class performers. Oh, and correction, incidentally, it was Rufus Jones as Bernard Delphont. He's wonderfully, wonderfully wicked because originally he thinks they're just completely out of it and sclerotic. Then he realizes there's a bit of money to be made, and it's good to have a good villain. Just as I have to say, the wives, Shirley Henderson as Lucille Hardy and Nina Ariander as Ida Laurel, they were well written. It's actually a well written film.
Yeah.
So even if you, like me, find Laurel and Hardy totally resistible, give it a try.
Absolutely. And I think it does really point at the relationship. You know, it wasn't always a happy one, but there was this connection that they had as a duo. And it makes you wonder, you know, regardless of what you think of them, no Laurel and Hardy, would there be a Morecambe and Wise, would there be, you know, and all these people that they influence, no doubt. Ratings out of 5 then, Richard, please.
Well, Eddie, I agree totally about the difficulties and differences they had. That is explored.
Yeah.
Although I do have to say, in the sentimental, nostalgic show business world that this movie decides to inhabit, you can probably guess how it's resolved.
Yes.
No prizes for that. But, I mean, it is a good movie, and I would give it 4 simply because I think you've got two standout performances, you've got an excellent supporting cast, and the movie has a heart, even if it's totally predictable.
Okay, so Richard, what are we going to look at next week then?
Oh, next week it's very, very interesting because we have Vice, the movie many people have been talking about, a movie that scored at the Globes, and also Christian Bale's performance has been much praised. And also we've got A Beautiful Boy with the ever-reliable Steve Carell and Timothy Chalamet, who of course made his name in Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, Richard, if anybody wants to find you, you're on Twitter, online.
And then it's www.richardfitzwilliams.com and at @rfitzwilliams. And, of course, don't forget, on the 22nd, we've got the Oscar nomination.
Oh, coming yes.
Out.
Lovely. We'll catch up on that with you, no doubt. Thank you very much, Richard. You have a great weekend. Take care.
Look Bye-bye. Forward to it.